week, we hear from P. David Pearson, professor of language, literacy, and culture at the University of California, Berkeley. Among his many distinctions, Dr. Pearson is a member of the National Academy of Education. He is a former dean of the College of Education at Berkeley, as well as at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. For several years, he was co-director of the Center for the Study of Reading. Before going to Berkeley, he was the John A. Hanna Distinguished Professor of Education at Michigan State University. He served as president of the National Reading Conference, as well as a board member of the International Reading Association, the National Reading Conference, and the Association for the American Colleges of Teacher Education. His honors include the William S. Gray Citation of Merit from the International Reading Association, the Oscar Causey Award for Contributions to Reading Research from the National Reading Conference, and the Alan Purvis Award from the National Council of Teachers of English. Among his books and articles are the Handbook of Reading Research, now in its third volume, and Learning to Read, Lessons for Effective Schools and Accomplished Teachers. Dr. Pearson pursues research on assessment, instruction, and curriculum reform in literacy. Welcome, Dr. Pearson.
Thanks so much, Bessie. It's great to be here.
We're glad to have you. Our topic today is reading first. Tell us about yourself and how you got interested in reading first. And for those who don't know, maybe give us some background on what is reading first.
Well, sure. You know, I've been a researcher in the area of language and literacy, particularly reading, for 40 years now. And if you're a researcher in the area of reading, then you can't fail to pay attention to reading first, because mm-hmm. reading first, which was the reading component of No Child Left Behind that was ushered in 2002 with the Bush administration, January of 2002, constituted the largest allocation of funds ever in the history of federal compensatory programs to support schools and districts around the country to upgrade their reading instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a significant piece of legislation, and it, had dramatic and widespread influence all around the country.
Yeah.
And what was different about reading first, compared to other, other instantiations of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, what we've always called Title I, is that reading first came with some mandates and some specifications about what it is you could and should be teaching, what kind of curriculum you should adopt, what kind of assessments you should adopt, what kind of pedagogy should be going on inside classrooms and mm-hmm. the like. So in that sense, mm-hmm. reading first represented a real departure.
And
by the way, it was also supposedly based upon scientifically based reading research,
right?
As that gets played out in that very influential document, the National Reading Panel report that was published in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a new direction for federal policy on reading,
mm-hmm.
And we'd never had anything like that before.
Wow! So now you've read lots of reports on the effectiveness of reading first. What do you find that these reports say?
Well, it depends on which reports you read, like a lot of things in research. First of all, probably the most interesting thing is that if you read all the reports that were compiled at the state level, like for Pennsylvania and Utah and Florida and, mm-hmm. Iowa, wherever, you get a really positive picture of the impact of reading first.
Mm-hmm.
I think that well over two-thirds of the state-level reports indicate that reading first has had a positive impact on student achievement, on teacher practices, on, the upgrading of curriculum for reading, how much time people spend on reading and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So you read the state-level reports and you get a really, really kind of a cheerleader story about reading first.
Mm-hmm.
However, the federal government also funded two quasi-experimental studies of reading first, where they it wasn't quite random assignment of schools to reading first or business as usual, but it was pretty close to that. And if you look at those studies where you have a much more rigorous design in terms of looking at the impact of reading first, there's not much to write home about in those.
Huh.
You get some very modest effects on kids' ability to read, pseudo words in first grade, but you don't get any impact on comprehension, and you don't get any impact for the older kids.
Hmm.
So there's really not much to write home about when you read the national reports. Hmm. So you got to, it's a tale of not a tale of two cities, but it's a tale of two kinds of findings, right?
Yeah.
Two stories here: the state by state story, which is really positive, and the national story, which isn't very positive at all. And one wonders, with all those resources and the like going into it, what do we get out of it?
Yeah. So how do you reconcile that these sets were such?
Well, I think what happened is that at the state level, and as it gets played out in district by district, you get a much more, I guess, what I would call up close and personal account of reading first, and you get a lot of enthusiasm and excitement about the new curricula and professional development and reading coaches assigned to schools, and there's a sort of sense of excitement about it. But then for some reason, when you did this sort of random sample across the country of sites, the excitement sort of averages out, and you don't get that sort of like press for doing something significant and important in reading. So I attributed a lot to the fact that in some states, reading first was really, really very, very powerful and very well organized and the like.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there's a report by the Center for Educational Policy, which actually makes the point that there isn't one reading first, and there isn't one No Child Left Behind. There are really 50 reading first and 50 No Child Left Behinds, or not 50, but however many states actually had reading first.
Fund. Right.
But the point is that it got instantiated differently in just about every state. So it's not one program; it's really 48 or 50 programs or whatever.
Now, in your article, you state that you remain convinced that even after you've read these reports, there's no credible evidence for mandated things like DIBELS or phonics beyond K-1, externally mandated curriculum. Could you talk more about those things?
Yeah, well, a lot of the implementation criteria for reading first were allegedly based upon, scientifically based reading research.
Yeah, you say allegedly. What do you mean by that?
Well, I say allegedly because I don't know of any credible evidence to suggest that if you use a progress monitoring system like DIBELS, which measures how fast kids can do things like name letter names, name letter sounds, tell how many phonemes are in a word, that those kinds of speeded metrics, not only that, how many words can they recall from a passage they've read? They put a speed metric on just about everything. I know of no credible evidence to suggest that if you monitor progress using a system like that, that kids actually make greater growth on some criterion like comprehension that we would really care about.
Hmm.
So, so you get a lot of, quote, assumptions about, well, it only stands to reason that you got to monitor progress skill by skill.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no evidence that that's actually true. So, so I'm pretty skeptical about some of those components. And you mentioned the phonics thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just fascinating that the findings from the National Reading Panel report suggest that phonics works pretty well if you do it, early and get done with it in kindergarten, grade one, maybe a little bit into grade two. But even the National Reading Panel report shows no credible evidence for phonics for older kids.
Hmm.
Yet, if you look at the instantiation of the Reading First funds, there were some remedial funds for older kids. You get a lot of mandated phonics.
Huh.
So.
Yeah.
No figure.
Yeah. So based on your reading of these reports, what do you recommend for teachers?
What do I recommend for teachers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been accused, and I'm happy to be accused of being a member of the radical middle in reading instruction for years and years,
uh-huh.
and I fear that I still am.
Yeah.
And what that means for me is that I'm all for, teaching kids the code and all the sort of fundamental skills, but I don't want anyone to take, I don't want anyone to sit on those laurels. There's a lot of other work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
There's issues of helping kids acquire a rich vocabulary, mm-hmm. Oral language development, developing a repertoire of reading comprehension processes and mm-hmm. strategies
mm-hmm.
that you can use when you encounter really, really tricky texts and the like. So, I want teachers to spend as much, if not more, time on those things than they spend on the, quote, more fundamental skills.
Yeah.
Even the National Reading Panel report, if you read carefully about what it says about phonics, it says that phonics can be effective if it's part of a comprehensive, balanced early yeah. reading program.
Yeah, not isolated, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so, I don't know how people get from those kinds of findings in a national report like the National Reading Panel report recommending that teachers spend all their time on phonics until kids, can have mastered that system.
Yeah.
It would be like taking a bunch of, 8-year-old kids and telling them that we're going to teach them how to play basketball, but you can't play a real basketball game until you've mastered dribbling and you've mastered the layups, you've
right.
mastered each of those shots, and, withholding the real game from them until they've mastered all the components,
right.
so kids would give up.
And so, what do you tell parents? Parents typically hear what the media is saying. What should they believe? What should they not believe? What do you recommend they do?
Well, I think that parents need to look for the same things that I want teachers to look for.
Mm-hmm.
When they talk to their teachers and their principals, they need to ask questions. Well, what are you doing to make sure that my kid gets the basics? What are you doing to make sure that my kid is developing good oral language skills? What are you doing to make sure that my kid learns how to comprehend the text that he is supposed to be reading and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it would be great if someone developed a kind of a checklist for parents to use when mm-hmm. when they interviewed teachers and principals about the reading programs in their schools, and they ask these questions. But that requires a lot of parent education and the like, and I don't know of any programs that are out there to do that, although, I have seen some parent education programs, but there's work to be done there so that parents are equipped to ask questions that really force schools and administrators and teachers to be accountable to good practices.
So, and what do you tell principals? Are they supposed
well,
to
I tell everybody
with,
the same thing.
Yeah.
I teach a course for people who are, future administrators, I talk to them about the components that you look for in a really first class reading program, and it includes. It includes all the elements, many of the elements that were in Reading First, but it includes a lot of other ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was one other thing I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other big problems with Reading First is that it was based upon the findings from the National Reading Panel report,
mm-hmm.
and they got what they call the Big Five, which is, phonics, phonemic awareness, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension.
Okay.
And that's all well and good, and I'm all for those things. But the National Reading Panel report doesn't say a word about how you put kids into groups. It doesn't say a word about, how you support reading through a writing program in your school. It doesn't say a word about the nature of the text that kids should be reading. And so the point being is that there's a lot of other components of a good curriculum that teachers and principals district level people have to negotiate, for which there is no guidance in the National Reading Panel report.
Mm-hmm.
And
but that could be good to let each local.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, I think, a continued emphasis on for policymakers to continue to make policies. Where do they go from here?
Well, you know, we've got some new standards, the Common Core standards that just came out, and I don't want to get into a discussion of that. But the good thing about those Common Core standards is they're pretty darn good in terms of sending a message that a good literacy program is balanced. And the Common Core standards deal not only with reading but also with writing, and also with oral language development. So that's a good kind of framework for us to work within, and that might shape things in a different way. But there's also some new movements in the Obama administration on assessment. And I'm hoping that we put a lot of muscle into developing, you know, assessments that are more consistent with the kinds of patterns that, you know, the kinds of skills and processes that I want to see more privileged in our curriculum.
Yeah, sure. If you're going to be held accountable, you'd like to be held accountable to something that's going to help kids actually comprehend.
Absolutely.
So where do we go now? What do we still need to learn about reading first and other policies?
I think we need some research to evaluate whether or not using these component skill assessments, like the DIBLs and other things like that, actually, you know, we need to evaluate whether or not they really do result in growth on things that matter, like comprehension and vocabulary growth and oral language development. You know, if those folks could prove that if you use their tests to shape curriculum and kids make growth on things that really matter, then I'd shut up. But until and unless they do, I'm going to keep, you know, telling people to avoid those kinds of tests.
Sounds good. So any other final comments then as we close out today?
No, I just guess that what all of this, none of the work in Reading First, none of the research of the last decade has dissuaded me from my position in the radical middle and that you've got to have a balanced reading program in which you pay attention to more fundamental skills, but you also pay attention to the growth processes like comprehension and composition and writing, that is the essence of literacy programs in schools, and why we're teaching literacy in the first place.
Right. It's always good to keep your eye on the big picture.
That's right.
Dr. P. David Pearson from the University of California, Berkeley, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Betsy.
You can find Dr. Pearson's discussion of Reading First in the Journal of Literacy Research, Volume 42, Issue 1. This podcast is now available from iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as our website, www.voiceofliteracy.org, where you can find a link to this article and additional work done by Dr. Pearson. We invite you to join online discussions of this and other podcast episodes, peruse a schedule of upcoming topics and guests, and post questions for those guests. This is the Voice of Literacy.